questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. A leader's job is to engage, align, and mobilize those who can help ignite a meaningful change. In the first two levels of this Illumify Game Changer, Illuminate and Amplify, Jonathan answered all of the questions that revealed how to illuminate and amplify his vision of change. And that's essential in order to make his change meaningful to those who can help him realize it. But it's not enough yet to effect change. A leader also has to be able to compel those same people to act in the ways that realize the vision. And that's why we're now in Unify, the third level of questions in the Illumify Game Changer. It's where the rubber hits the road, or not, in leadership communication. Illuminate is the what meaningful change. Please read the next Unify question.
How will this change take place? What's your plan? If you haven't thought that far yet, no gift like the present.
A little humor in there. Can you read the first line of the prompt again?
Yeah. What's your plan?
There you go. Mm. More emphasis on plan.
Yeah. What's your plan? How will this change take place? What's your plan? How do we plan? I do a lot of planning in shapes.
Do you? Geometrical.
Yeah, shapes. Geometrical. Circles, things in the middle, a core, spokes coming out of them, skeletons for a piece of writing, you know, bullet points, and then under the bullet points, first hints of what the ideas might be. Classical.
Yeah.
Classical techniques. What I'm feeling right now is the first thing is a question. I have the vision in a very short form and then in a 5-minute speech form. I know that it can expand, it will and will branch. So the writer in me would say, okay, is that enough for now? Do we go with that and say, okay, that's enough for now, and let's start thinking about moving out, moving away from the kitchen table and towards the first conversations. I feel that there is, in the longer version, the 5-minute speech version, I think there's enough to get started with.
So a speech writer becomes speech maker.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
How do you feel about that?
That feels good. That feels good because you don't have to worry about whether somebody else is going to like them at this stage. You've just got to be really comfortable yourself and find your own discipline to go back and test it yourself and improve the language here, improve it there. Being honest with yourself when it doesn't feel right. So that does feel good, and having it there feels good. I scribbled just before we broke for lunch. I scribbled in my notes that there were two vital relationships in a vision. One was with your collective stroke audience. And number two was the relationship with your vision.
Your relationship with your vision?
Yes. that the leader has two vital relationships, which will always be there, and are feels to me now. I mean, I scribbled it. I hadn't thought about it very much, but I think I was listening to you talk through. You were talking through leadership, stories of leadership, and I just scribbled down that there are two vital relationships. One is between the leader and the audience, and we've talked about the audience at different stages and different sizes. So I've left it deliberately vague in my mind and on the page for now.
I think we may need a better word for audience.
Right.
Don't you?
Well, in Amplify, we were using collective, and yeah. It's on the guideline card, which I like.
As they're listening, I think we can create a word for that.
So, and which is not audience, you said?
Yeah. As you keep going, I'm going to look up.
Yeah, I mean, I've still got a foot in the Amplify phase. Perhaps
good.
Because I'm still, you know, digesting that, and also, not for the first time, you feel the good and necessary flow between the different parts of the method, between Illuminate, Amplify, and Unify. Mm-hmm. So if I have a one foot still in Amplify, that means I'm liking the word collective. I sort of associate that word.
Yes, and again, this is not a change you can ignite yourself. You need a collective,
right.
And you saw
right.
the cooperative aspect of that. Actually, you have spoken about having to rescue language, right? Well, this may be one of them, because when I actually look at the origin of the word audience, it's the action of hearing from 1374, Old French, a hearing, a listening, mm-hmm. to hear, to perceive, to grasp. And then there's a relation to reception. Mm-hmm. So I think we've just distorted the word audience. For me, it's commercialized.
Sure.
And degraded a bit, yeah. So rescue that one, would you please?
So you do want to use that word?
Yeah, I do.
Sure.
But you need
yeah.
to give it its,
yeah.
its worth
yeah.
as well, you
well,
use it,
I,
as you would.
I see these two very intimate and vital relationships that must be there and stay there throughout. And one is the relationship between the leader and her or his audience. And it is a relationship. You know, we've felt that very, very keenly in the whole discussion in Amplify, but also as we move into Unify, it's a relationship.
Yes.
It's a relationship. And then the second relationship is between the leader and the vision. Even more intimate, perhaps, because it's the relationship with the audience. The two words I've scribbled below that are communication and mobilization together. Communication and mobilization together with the audience. And then the relationship between the leader and the vision is the moment of creation and self-expression. And there's a different temperature there. And what I'm feeling at the moment, because it's still... I can't say early anymore, but we're not at the end. Let me put it that way.
I love that you use the word temperature.
Yeah, temperature is that there is a warmth, a comforting warmth in the relationship between the leader and the vision. There has to be. Yes, it can. Some part of it should question you and challenge you, if only because it's new to yourself, first of all. But then I feel this warmth that comes from the need to hold on to it and to protect it. Not from the outside world, not that sort of protection. We've talked at length about the need for the vision to stay open for all sorts of reasons. retain its integrity, but remain open at the same time. That is possible. But almost as, let's just very briefly go back to fiction for a second. Again, I think it's, I always quote Toni Morrison, so I apologize to her if it wasn't her that wrote this, but this idea of a piece of fiction as being a letter that you write to yourself, first and foremost, it's that intimate, that the self-expression, the act of creativity, it's not for the audience, it's for you. Which, when you say that, it always sounds horribly selfish, and it's not at all. It's simply that to get to the truth of your story, you are writing for yourself. And when you start thinking about the audience and what the audience would like, there lies danger. Uh-huh. There lies danger.
Yeah. In this case, however, you have to consider what the audience is feeling or could feel and think and do.
Absolutely. Certainly at that rubber hitting the road moment.
Yeah. Where in order to align and mobilize.
Absolutely. 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 And that there's a critical difference there. What I've heard a lot of writers say, they're not all the same, but what I've heard a number of writers say is that when the book's gone and it's out there, there's a real sense of departure and perhaps some relief with that. And it's gone, it's done. And it's the end of the process in some way. Whereas if I listen to somebody like Nick Cave talking about music, a musical performer, there's much more of an ongoing exchange through the live performance. Live performance not only keeps the songs alive, but they develop, they change. With the audience, they change over the years. So there's a difference there. So bringing this back to the question, what's the plan? That text, the heart of the vision, so where the vision takes the form of text. Right now, today, I feel that there is enough to get started. Because if I went any further now and tried to expand it, I think I'd be jumping ahead at this stage. Mm-hmm. And then it's becoming a solitary venture again.
Yes, could you recognize that?
You know, so
go back as a hermit to your cave.
Well, indeed.
Keep writing.
And in a very practical sense, that would be, for example, and I'm just taking this as an example, resisting the temptation to go back and expand it into a political manifesto. Mm-hmm. Where you would take that vision and say, okay, what does this mean for the economy? What does it mean for culture?
Yeah.
What does it mean for welfare? And so on. So I feel that the text now is that the vision in its textual form is enough.
Good.
For now.
And how does that feel?
That feels great. It feels great.
Okay.
It feels great. And within this group of people around the kitchen table, and bringing in Catherine as well, who's not with us today, but has been with us for long hours, both in Toronto and London, it feels there's a sense of achievement there.
Good.
You know, a piece of work done, which always feels good. So we have that. In line with what we learned through Amplify, I sense a need to start thinking about who I need to talk to now. The first conversations, starting with friends and acquaintances, but then looking beyond that, as we've discussed before.
So are you seeing now, Jonathan, on that in the first iteration, you're not going to limit it to friends, close friends or family?
Oh, absolutely.
Members.
No,
okay.
No.
Good.
I think in my... This is perhaps peculiar to me, I mean, not unique to me, but peculiar in the sense that the way I've lived my life and the meaning and significance that Europe has had and continues to have in my life, a lot of my friends back in Brussels, for example, are intimately tied up with the idea of Europe. Mm. So it just is what it is, that some of those first conversations I'd be foolish not to have, mm-hmm. put it that way, I'd be foolish not to have conversations with some of those people about the vision.
Yes, you would have been. And at one point in this journey, maybe midway through Amplify, you actually resisted that because you weren't there. How could you do that? Yeah. So, and now do you see a way through that?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, definitely. Even if, and let's go back to the word vehicle, even if the actual vehicle at this stage is still not
right,
perfectly visible and delineated. And
great. And now with view, say that's your inner circle first.
How do inner you circle, describe it? I'd say inner circle, which is both friends, friends that I've worked with, people who know me very well, for reasons of circumstance are mostly living and working still in Brussels, and that's fine, that's good. But Brussels, after all, is still one of my homes. So it's
and will always be.
And will always be.
Even
always
though you're
be.
About to complete yeah. the sale of your condo
yes.
there, you will still feel
absolutely.
Its home.
Very
good.
Much so. Excellent. Very much so. But as you say, Marianne, then beyond we look beyond that, and I can see the outlines of other conversations in Brussels, but also in other cities. I could begin to have a few, not many, but a few conversations in this city, Copenhagen, because of the people I've spoken to here, because I've taken an interest in how this society operates and who are the voices, who are the institutions, not just in politics, but beyond that.
And you've been looking for a way, and I know you're already doing some, to contribute, I think was your word,
yes,
this society.
Very important. So language learning, for example, it's a mark of respect for me.
Learning Danish.
Yes, yeah. Learning Danish.
It's one of the most difficult languages
yes.
in the world.
Certainly. My Danish friends will allow me to say this, certainly in terms of pronunciation. We know this. We all know this. We know where we are with that. So, yes, a mark of respect, but also on a more practical level, a desire to integrate and to be able to offer something and to be able to work with organisations here, whichever sector they're in. So, yes, I could begin to have first conversations here. One voice coming from my home country.
Your home country is calling.
Yeah, well, it landed in my email without me asking for it, but it wasn't spam. It was the sort of email where you thought, I have no idea why this is here, but it's okay because it chimes with... So whatever I signed up for 3 years ago, I'm not going to complain because I'm glad I got this email. An organization called, I think it's called Open Britain, and who appear to have, I've only read two or three of their emails, they started arriving mysteriously, Marianne, recently. I don't know if you're behind this, but...
An enchantment, perhaps. Mysteriously, isn't that interesting?
Mysterious ways. She moves in mysterious ways. And I was very taken by this, that the language, what they're trying to do to revitalize British democracy, and with a sense of not just urgency and emergency. These people, whoever they are, but they seem to be doing great stuff, clearly have a sense of urgency, and that there's a real... I see them imagining a lot of warning lights that have been flashing for some time around British politics. It's probably the first communication that I've received about British politics that I haven't immediately deleted. And part of that, again, this is the serendipity of the timing. This also coincides with a moment where people like myself, who have lived outside of the UK for more than 15 years, will soon recover the right to vote in national elections. We lost that right some time ago.
You did,
even we did.
Though the UK was part of the EU and you were living in the EU.
Yes, this is where the European Union rightly leaves leeway to national, the member, the national member states to organize their electoral rules in whichever way they wish, in line with traditions. And there will be a certain number of principles within European Union legislation which would keep the member states within certain parameters, sure. Mm-hmm. But it's rightly one of these areas where national, the member states are free to, you know, within parameters, organise their electoral systems.
But what's interesting about that, given Brexit, is that you had British citizens living within the European Union in those various countries, unable to vote in the election that determined whether the UK would be remain part of the EU. So those who knew perhaps best the benefits of the European Union, living it firsthand, didn't have a voice.
That's right. I cannot remember, so I'm not going to pronounce with confidence on this, but that's right. I cannot remember exactly what the rules were for registration for the referendum on the UK's membership of the European Union, but I remember that I clearly could not take part in that.
We'll put a pin on this in a second, but in adding to this, my son, who's living in the UK and not a UK citizen, he's still Canadian, can vote.
Right.
And was entitled to vote on the Brexit referendum.
Yep.
So go figure. Back to shared home.
Yes.
I am looping this back.
Yes, quite right too. Indeed. And I was going to bring it back into our discussion of the vision and the unify phase of the method here. What it says to me, it sort of confirms what we briefly touched on yesterday or the day before, which is that we have to identify the excuses we might make for ourselves not to act. And I think one of them for me has been the idea that, well, I'm not living in the UK anymore. That is where my political home would be normally. I had a brief moment where, having gained Belgian citizenship in 2018, partly as a response to Brexit, I say partly because having lived in Belgium for 25 years, I'm fairly certain that I would have wanted citizenship anyway, that I've won for lots of different reasons. But gaining Belgian citizenship in 2018 gave me the opportunity once before I left to vote in the federal and regional and local elections of Belgium once before I left, which was a wonderful and very, very moving experience. Really felt very special. So what does this say for the vision? I think it you know, I've received mysteriously these emails from an organization called Open Britain, which seemed to be doing great things. What caught my attention, again, we've touched on this a couple of times in the conversations, and it's more than a detail. Something that would reinvigorate my British political identity would be the prospect of Britain moving to a system of proportional representation. And we've talked about that, and how deeply wrong the current system of first past the post is. Brittany, you and I were discussing this briefly yesterday or the day before, where we said, look, if you and I launched a party in the UK tomorrow, first of all, that wouldn't happen for the reasons that we know. So that's not good, because the barriers for entry would be too high. But if we were to do that, and in the first election, our party gained 20% of the vote nationally, there is a chance that despite the 20%, which is a decent score in any democracy, we would have zero MPs, for the very simple reason that we would not have won any city or town anywhere in the UK. So great score, 20%, well done. You have zero members of the European Parliament. If anybody can tell me that's a good system.
We have the same issue.
Right, you're familiar with that. So The fact that you Open Britain in their first email to me was talking precisely about this issue. I thought, okay, good. Somebody.
I'm listening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what are we saying here? That I'm perhaps more open than I was a year ago or 2 years ago to the idea of some conversation about politics and the future of politics with my home country.
And how does that feel, Jonathan?
It's still difficult. Yeah. Still difficult. There's some healing to be done there. If I've talked often in this podcast, in this journey, Illumify, about my local football team in Nottingham, that's because it's not just the sanctity of our local roots, it's also the wonderful self-mobilization at the grassroots that I've seen there around issues of homelessness, hunger, respecting the LGBT community and welcoming them into the stadium. All sorts of absolutely wonderful issues where the club and its supporters have stood up and said, yeah, we care about this and we recognize the power that we have in our community. So that has been there and that feels great. So my relationship with Nottingham has always stayed really, really strong and warm and very passionate. The question now is, can I rediscover or repair? Can I restore and repair a relationship with the idea of British politics? And maybe, that's already progress.
The very fact that you're contemplating it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Creates a new possibility.
Yeah, it does. And let me be clear to myself, but also for anybody listening, despite everything I've said about my European identity and what I feel about the European Union, I never felt any anger at all about the Brexit vote. I understood it. I didn't feel angry towards anybody who had voted for it. Not at all. And never would. There's no grudge here. Between brackets, I felt very angry towards some of the men who profited politically in their careers.
And continue to.
Yeah.
Gee, look at David Cameron coming back.
I'm not going to name any names, but
I'll name them for you.
Did I feel angry towards them? Yeah. Because I'm going to end it here, otherwise I'll get too angry. But this is one of the great paradoxes of Brexit. Some of the men, the MEN, some of the men who were pushing Brexit to further their careers were betraying their country.
And they knew it.
Yeah. So they wrapped themselves in the flag, the British flag, but in truth, they were betraying their people.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I've got that over and done with.
Okay, good.
Said that.
But also you have referenced, from as a professional communicator, how it did anger you that they communicated it so poorly.
Oh, the people on my side, yes. The people who wanted to remain.
They omitted the feeling side of things.
Completely.
And went
completely
hard on the facts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So from that respect.
Absolutely.
But it's so interesting that your focus is, with your vision, even though it's universal, it makes sense that your vision has the European focus to it.
Yes.
And yet now you're willing to extend it.
Yeah. It's the homecoming, isn't it?
It's the homecoming.
It's the homecoming, yeah. Pooh. Yeah. A lot of emotions there.
So you have revealed, if a plan is comprised of, well, in fact, you know, plan starts with the strategy. Mm. This question gets to the plan, but really there's an overriding strategy.
Yes.
Could you go there first?
Well,
because you've outlined many steps
right,
of the plan.
Right. What I'm piecing together on the page is the text, the vision itself. Okay, got that. the people, the first conversations. Okay, got that, and I'd start to see them in categories around different parts of society: political, social, cultural, grassroots, NGO, international, European, local, and so on. So I'd have a very clear view of how they fit together. So we've got the text itself. We have the people. Would I start at this stage, and I'm questioning myself here, would I start at this stage to think about tools, platforms? No, it feels too early. It feels too early for that.
You had just said as well, rightfully, you still need to really discern the who.
Yeah,
so you can't
exactly
go to venues, pools, right, all of that,
no,
until...
No, yeah. I think that's right.
You would have misalignment.
Yes. And then,
likely.
And in line with the spirit of Amplify, I would gain knowledge, very important knowledge, mm-hmm, from the first,
yeah,
conversations,
yeah,
inner circle, next circle.
And that's why, you know, in planning, you have various stages.
Right,
let's
yes
do this,
yes,
and assess.
Yes.
And see what we've learned from it before,
yes,
we roll it out further.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Yeah. Yeah.
You have already revealed yourself. I truly felt this might be a big question, so I parked it for a little bit, because what are we at? 4 days in. This is our fourth day resuming,
yes. Yes.
Now in Copenhagen. The first day, had you answered that question, you might have run for the hills. Because,
yeah, I probably would have done.
Right?
Yeah.
And look,
there are no hills in Denmark.
No.
I'd have found them, though. I'd
have found
them.
Run for the sea. But you do see that, don't you?
Well, yes. And what's going... There's a truth here, isn't there? There's a truth of... And you've said this to me, and you're right. If you have the vision and it means something to you, and you're going to be true to the vision, at the very least... you have to take it somewhere. At the very least, you have to take it somewhere. You can't put it on the shelf, leave it as a set of notes. I have a set of notes, and
well,
I feel good about it. That's always a choice. It's a choice. You always have the choice. But I do recognize that. And again, and if I bring in the anger that surfaced about 5 minutes ago.
passion. How about we call it passion?
Yeah, passion, but there is anger as well.
Because it's intolerable.
It is, and then spin round a second and give it a much more, for me, sort of inspiring and glorious aspect. So Ukraine's joining the European home, and that real strong sense of home there. The last piece I wrote, political piece I wrote before Christmas was... Ukraine is coming home.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so that there is anger, there is a deep passion around Ukraine and what that symbolizes, what it means for all of us. And I'm saying all of us, not just in Europe. Yeah. All of us who believe deeply in the promise of democracy. So if you put all of this together, Ukraine, the future of the European Union, my need as a son to refind and have, you know, to come home at some point, then there are plenty of real commands, almost duties, to express the vision. And it won't be one way, but yes, it will happen.
I can actually see you speaking to that Open Britain group.
I would love to. I mean, having seen their email, it was not just what they were saying, but how they were saying it. It really resonated. I thought, mm-hmm, there's some good people here,
mm-hmm,
some good people.
And
doing
you would,
good...
of course, verify that. But it, yeah, could really be.
Yeah,
they could be your people.
May well be. Judging by the last...
Some of your people.
Yeah, definitely. Which says what? They're out there.
Yes, they're out there.
That's the thing,
absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely, but they need a voice.
Yes, yeah. In the same way that one of the loveliest conversations I had just before Christmas when I went back home to Nottingham, and it came out the blue, and it was somebody who I'd... We were not close friends, so there was no... We hadn't promised each other to have lunch, going back to your previous conversation about...
Credible commitment.
Mm-hmm. We weren't in that zone. But still, lovely email came out of the blue. How are you doing? Do you want to meet up? And we met up last autumn. And then I said, look, I'm going to be back home at Christmas, so let's have a drink at Christmas as well. And two just lovely, wonderful conversations, which went from our football club, Nottingham Forest, to Nick Cave. There you go. And...
You mean those two?
There was no link between
us.
Yeah. Well, that's when you know you've met a friend, isn't it?
Oh, that's nice.
When you think, wow, we have this in common. This is already big, but we have this in common as well. No, that's not possible. It's not possible. So that was lovely, and there was something there. This is interesting. There was something there where I felt an opening, because this man, lovely, lovely man, who has, for the last few years now, has been the democratically elected chair of the Supporters Trust at Nottingham Forest, who brings together the voice of the supporters and relays our concerns to the club.
Wow.
He interviews the chairman of the
club. That.
Yeah, well, my friend quite rightly says that we're a rare... Well, here's the thing, and this is why... This goes back to the vision. I think there are thousands and thousands of football supporters in England at the moment who desperately want to protect their cultural institutions, yeah, their football clubs, which have existed through 4, 5, 6 generations now, and don't want them to become globalized financial entities and ultimately
exclusive,
and they'll one day be avatars in what did our close friend, our dear friend Mark Zuckerberg call it, the metaverse, the glorious metaverse. Yes, you, dear football fans, you stood in the rain for 100 years watching a football club. I'm going to come and save you and turn you and your club into avatars.
He didn't really say
that.
No,
I'm saying that.
Okay.
I'm being facetious. But here's the thing. Andy, my friend, said to me, where we're having lunch just before Christmas, Jonathan, what gives you hope?
Oh, what a great question.
Yeah. Ah. So after I'd coughed and gathered myself, I said, Andy, what people like you and what you're doing, people mobilizing at the grassroots because they have an appetite for something better.
Ah.
Yeah. And so when you see people doing it, you know that there are others doing it, and others and others and others. You know that deep down.
And Jonathan, no disrespect, but you started these conversations by saying you've been, by design, by choice, living in a cave. A hermit in a cave, now necessitated by writing, etc. But if you think of those other people that you know are out there, you have evidence of that already. How many of them are still, I'll use the word, hiding in a cave or ensconced in a cave? And once they know it's safe to come out, there's something to come out for. Could that make a difference?
It will always make a difference. I mean, I've got to be careful with my own person here, to keep some distinction here. And this is just for the ethics of our conversation and my own personal ethics and the people that I share my life with. You're absolutely right. I needed, at a particular moment in my life, I think, just to retreat into the cave
and create,
replenish.
You were creating.
The writing I could not have done in my old life.
No.
Back in Brussels, it just wouldn't have happened. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
So yes, it did actually lead to something very productive. But I have wrestled with the question over the last year 2 years whether that part of me that wanted to be part of the conversation, yeah, the public conversation about certainly the future of Europe, other questions as well, but primarily the future of Europe. Could I just let that wither away? No. There's a very clear answer to that. No. It's a difficult question to answer, and this is where we are now in this conversation in Unify. It's a difficult question to answer when you are in a country and it still feels like early days and you still feel a little bit lonely and isolated. You're learning the language, but not so much that you can actually
have the level of conversation
into a Danish organization and have.
Right. Not yet.
So there are natural constraints on what I'm able to do or what I feel able to do at the moment. Other personal stresses and questions that we've discussed. But let's come back to the broader question. I must find ways to, at the very least, express this vision. Now, express already brings in other people. You're already bringing in other people.
Unless you're talking to yourself.
Right. Yes. And that's me at the bus stop ranting. which will come one day.
Fact that it hasn't yet is remarkable.
Yeah,
admirable.
Yeah, I'm hanging on in there.
Or he's back in his cave.
Yes, yes, yeah. So I know that has to happen. And perhaps, I think it's thanks to the work we've done together here that I can say that now. But I know that has to happen.
Great.
And connect that to the vision to be truthful to the vision and to serve the vision. You know,
and your conversation with Andy, who was Andy?
Yeah, lovely, yes. Andy. Yeah.
Okay, lovely, yeah. Andy. Mm. Something surfaced, you called it an opening, that you weren't looking for.
No, I wasn't looking for it. And it was suddenly a glimpse of, I can say this, it won't alarm my partner, Liz, because I've said this to her before and she's comfortable and relaxed about it. But the glimpse of the possibility of a life back in Nottingham. Huh. So what are we saying here? What we're saying here is that all those previous homes, Nottingham, yeah, Brussels, are maybe going to come, well, they never left my life, but they're maybe going to become perhaps a little bit more prominent in some way, even more prominent. They might be places where I can actually do something as well, even if I continue to live here. So what are we doing here? It's back to what we were saying with Jean yesterday, expanding the notion of home, trying to get beyond the geographical limits, not worry about the geographical limits where, oh, how would I, but I don't live there, how would I do that? Oof, the travel budget would be awful, can't do that. So you're closing it down. You're closing it down because you're looking at the geography.
Right, and you're viewing it through scarcity.
Yes, exactly. Yes, precisely. It's exactly that. So, and that's where you need to be creative and say, well, okay, this thing that I do in Nottingham, let's say, that would be digital, mostly, not completely because I go back and see my family, but a lot of it would be digital in those long periods between visits, and that's okay. You know,
I'm not a fan of, you know me,
I'm not a fan of Zoom and other digital tools. But hey, you know, if that's what works to get you between the face-to-face, then fine.
And as you know, and again, part of leadership is the ability to generate and manage conversations impeccably. You know how to do that. I know how to do that. I do that. This work, I do other work, of course, but I do this exact work virtually.
Yes.
And we have the same level of conversation.
Right.
We're not in the room. Same level of conversation. So it can be done when you know how to do it.
Mm. I was going to say, you must have picked up a whole range of sort of techniques and inner knowledge there of how to keep the quality, the intimacy, the honesty of those conversations.
Yeah. Well, you hold a high standard and you don't allow. Yeah. You don't do not allow that, you know, technology is a barrier. Of course it is. However, you can supersede that barrier by the nature of the communication.
Yes.
And I, you know, early days of Zoom were awkward for everybody, but about a year ago, maybe now a year ago, I had an organization of, they had chosen five people to experience this and to have the Illuminate conversations. So for 2.5 hours each week, we had that conversation virtually. I didn't know any of the five. And within the first end of the first conversation, they were sending me messages saying things like, we've never had this kind of conversation before. And it, over the series of 6 weeks, six conversations, I watched these people coming in virtually, even when they were on holidays. They wanted those conversations so much. So they can be done virtually. Nottingham is still only a short plane ride away, but it also virtually is in your grasp.
Yes.
And beyond Nottingham.
And these are two cities that I will always, always go back to regularly. Nottingham and Brussels. No question.
Yes, that's where your heart is. Part of your heart is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I love, Jonathan, that you're starting to see the who more clearly and that is leading you to the places, virtual or otherwise.
Yes, physical places.
That together are starting to assemble a plan of steps. Is there anything else you want to add to that?
No,
to this question?
No, not at this stage. The planning stage I like.
Good.
You know, if I look back to professional life, I think that part of strategy where you're looking ahead.
And moves down the board.
Yeah. Yeah. The phases. And
yeah. Anticipating.
Yeah.
The possibilities. What if then?
Yeah,
what
exactly.
if then? Yeah.
That's fun.
Good. It is. It's fun. Yeah. And I love also that you don't feel encumbered at all, limited at all by the fact that you cannot see all of the steps yet.
No. And I'm
very
hanging on,
commendable.
Yes, and I'm hanging on to it as a good thing, actually. That
it is a good thing.
Yes, as I said just a while ago, I don't want to take energy. I think I would take energy out of it by going away, sitting down, and turning it into a manifesto, for example. Mm-hmm.
Or a year-long plan.
Right. Yeah.
With all the various tactics and all of that.
Yes.
And as you said earlier, could be moot by the time you get to that. Irrelevant because things have changed.
Right. So
none of this is carved in stone.
No, exactly. And stone's a great word. But I was just going to say we're back into that very healthy tension between the core of the vision, which needs to be certain and to have confidence. Mm-hmm. And to a small degree is set in on a small stone within your own heart. Not forever, but you hang on to something that feels right, true. But then you've got the little give that is necessary as well. So also back to the idea of a collective where, you know, we're not drawing organigrams here. It's a collective. It's necessarily and positively, healthily loose in its early days because it doesn't have hierarchy. It doesn't have shape.
It's supple too, isn't it?
Right, and it's bound together. You hope if the vision has got legs and energy and emotional resonance, and it's going to mean something to people. It's that energy that will bind it together. In the early days, beyond that, it will need more. But in the early days, that
Well, if you think of a perimeter, and what do we do with a space, you know, a piece of land? Sometimes we claim for protection, preservation. If we have animals on that land, it is for protection, preservation. If we're farming a particular, whatever, we live in a neighborhood, we frame our piece of land with a fence. But fences are rigid structures. Some can be permeated if there are holes in them, little things can get through. Some cannot. Some are higher, thicker than others. They are meant to fence in something, to limit with hard borders. That's not what your vision is. It shouldn't be what any vision is, but yours, again, of universal. And even within the European Union, and now you're talking about the UK, the perimeters are expanding, are they not? The expanse of it.
Yeah, very much so.
And it could even be across the sea.
Yes.
The big pond.
Yes.
Because it is universal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All of that.
Okay.
All of that rings true, really. All of it.
Good. Would you like to go back to the question in summary, please?
Yes. How will this change take place? What's your plan? If you haven't thought that through yet, if you've not thought that through far enough yet, no gift like the present. So what's your plan? What I'm sticking with here is I have a very clear sense of how all these different parts can fit together. I see that very clearly. I see the relationship between myself and the vision itself, the relationship between the vision and text, different lengths, the relationship between myself and the first circles of people, starting with friends and particular friends, but then beyond that, wider institutions, wider groupings, being open to the serendipity of a chance email that suddenly hits the mark and makes you think, hang on. So all of this, I can see how it fits together. And the reason I feel energy for this now is because, as you and I were discussing at the end, I look back on professional life, lots of happy memories, lots of less happy memories. But one thing that I always enjoyed was real strategy. And where you're really thinking about the problem. I mean, when you first go into communications, you learn the ABC, key messages, target audiences, and then how you match those, the rudiments, exactly. And then as you go through your career, you develop your own way of doing it. And I it wasn't rocket science.
Not to you.
No, but it was, I never lost the pleasure of sitting down and writing. It would often be 4, 5, 6 pages. If you're really trying to get to the core to it, I mean, you can go a lot longer, but I often felt that you should be able to have a really clear and compelling strategy over 5, 6 pages. And I would love doing that.
Nice.
I would love doing that.
And that's, you say it's not rocket science, but there's a lot that goes into that.
There is.
Not everyone can do that. You have to, first of all, have a strategic capability. And as much as I constantly see webinars in the communications profession, become a strategic communicator. If you cannot think strategically because you, no offense, don't have the cognitive capability, you're not going to become a strategic thinker.
No.
You're a leader.
Yeah.
In your case.
Yeah.
So it's good you love the strategy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know in strategy, again, moving parts, right?
Yeah.
So if one thing changes, then something else may change.
Sure.
You have to be agile enough.
Sure. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Do I dare ask one more question related
go ahead.
To this, because you've seen now the interconnection of what fits where.
Mm.
Where does the book fit?
The book is separate, and I've been saying this to myself over the last few days and sort of coming into this Copenhagen leg of Illumify, that I, for my own benefit, I want to keep it separate, very separate, if only to protect that piece of work. It's as simple as that. I've said a couple of times before in our conversations that yes, the energy in the book and the imagination and the things that I've surfaced in the book, I think are coming from some of the places that we've gone to during the Illumify process.
Good. It is called
Mother Europe. Mother Europe. So
I'm
and I don't
talking about some Caribbean island as the location of your story.
Mother Europe, and that's fine, and that all feels good. That there is a natural relationship there. All feels good, and I'm able to say that because I think I'm reasonably confident that I've avoided. I've avoided the danger, the pitfall of writing a piece of fiction as a way of expressing your political views.
Well, you set out to avoid that, didn't you?
I was keenly aware of the dangers of that. The best I can say, because it's still not finished, I intend to finish it over the next 3 to 4 months, so that I go into the.
Given you've already written a draft, do you think that as you go back to complete it, review the draft, you're coming from a different place? You may have a different perspective on some of it.
Always, yes. I mean, and you've said this about the vision, but visions generally, not just the one we're discussing here, my vision, but visions generally. This is right, that there is, try as we may to isolate or protect our work, whatever it is, from outside influence and interference. You can't. The world is just constantly interrupting and encroaching upon whatever you're doing. It just is. And you can't fight that. It's okay.
But instead of encroaching, is there a more positive word you can use? Influencing, expanding. What I'm thinking is instead of your perspective having been constrained or confined or diminished, when you go back to the writing, knowing yourself, because this vision is true to you, even more so, maybe that will somehow influence positively.
I think I just wouldn't know, honestly.
I won't know till you write.
No.
Because you can't quantify or identify what may be different now.
No, that's right. That's right.
And you wrote that when you speak of confidence you feel in your vision. You wrote your book from a place of confidence, did you not?
No, this is perhaps, I was going to say a contrast, but there are similarities here. I started writing fiction from a place of need, needing to get this off my chest, saying to myself, if I don't do this now, I will never do it.
Get it off your chest. Is that comparable to quote unquote Jonathan Hill, I have things to say?
Yes and no, bit of both.
Okay.
The mantra there that you mentioned, I've got things to say, was very much the bubbling up of a little bit of frustration, a little bit of anger, I think coming towards the second half of last year, possibly looking at the state of the world, possibly looking at the very, very, very real threats from Russia and elsewhere, and also perhaps starting to accept that it wasn't going to be healthy to feel angry about things
to
and not
hold it,
hold
all
it
in.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that was happening.
Okay.
I think with the book it was more age, actually, and that's fine. that if I don't do this now, I'm not going to do it. Because I knew that it would need time. Mm-hmm.
You may not have heard of her. Do you know the artist Grandma Moses?
No, I don't think so.
She was quite an acclaimed artist. She's long gone now, but I believe, I can't quantify her age, but she was a grandma when she started painting, advanced age.
Mm.
So it's interesting that we always assign a time limit to creativity or to... But I can see why you would say that, because writing a book is such a major commitment. And you didn't know what was coming next in your life either, professionally.
No, indeed.
So it was in part driven by time.
Yeah.
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 You have a plan, Jonathan?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Yes.
Good. I can't wait to see you put it into effect. Thank you.
Thank you.
It took a while for Jonathan to answer this question. But if you've been listening from the beginning of this leader's journey through the Illumify Game Changer, you may see, like me, that he's actually made a quantum leap here. This question is deliberately provocative because it makes the leader begin to identify exactly how the change will be realized. It makes the prospect of change real. When Jonathan first asked what his plan was, he retreated to his comfort zone, reflecting on what he would write and the conversations he would have. And that's understandable, as those are the actions that comprised his professional and personal life till now. He also saw the need to be strategic. All of this goes into crafting a plan, but it's not a plan in and of itself. When he answered again, he made that quantum leap. He saw that he needs to take his vision beyond his inner circle of family and friends. He doesn't have the plan detailed yet, but he's reaching more broadly, and that's a good first step. The leader's journey continues. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.